Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Wes from Geek, starting a new podcast here called CIA, which stands for Celestial Intervention Agency. We're like a catch-all Doctor Who podcast. Joining us, I guess we'll go around the table, starting with Ninja Man there. Everybody kind of introduce yourselves, and then we'll get into discussion. All right? Do it.
All right. I guess I'm Ninja Man. I'm kind of new West or another friend, so I've done a few of the earlier podcast stuff, and I'm from Alabama, and hope we'll have an interesting discussion today.
All right. Next, don't be shy. Okay, everyone's being shy. DM that tell us a little about yourself.
I'm Diane. I'm calling from Sarasota, Florida. Kind of new to this whole podcasting thing, but a long time involved in Doctor Who.
Awesome.
Hi, guys. I'm Darth Skeptical. I'm calling from Hawaii.
Hawaii. Awesome. Wow.
Still morning there, I bet.
Very much so.
Nice and pretty today out there.
Yeah. Looks like it.
I'm actually down here in Panama City, Florida, and it's beautiful out today, and I imagine the water is nice and crystal clear. So I'm in here with you guys. That's dedication.
How's the fire situation up there?
Actually, I heard today that the fire has destroyed between state line of Georgia and Florida about 400 square miles. So they say it's 80% under control, and how they know that, I don't know, because a fire is a fire, and if there's 10% of it going, it's still going.
Yeah, because I know we're, a couple hundred miles away down here, but last week, not so much this week, but the week before, we got a lot of the smoke, and it's
right.
Amazing how far it travels.
Right, I mean, it's you can still see black stuff. Now, Panama City was actually on fire last week, but they 100% got that one contained, so there's no fire. I guess I'm going to start us off with just a random topic we had discussed before we started the show. We're going to start out talking about American television, and would a show like Doctor Who be able to survive if it was on one of the, I guess there's what, five networks now? One of the five main networks, whether it be Fox or CW or NBC, ABC, or CBS. So let's go. Anybody got anything they want to say about that?
Oh, yeah, my first thought was no, it could never survive. But you look at how well Doctor Who is doing on the Sci-Fi network. I think it could get along fairly well on a small cable channel or possibly in the hands of the right persons developing it. I'm thinking ABC would have been the best bet just because of the chances they've taken with programming and being able to do well with new ideas.
What's an example you think from ABC?
Pardon?
I said, what show right now or a previous show from ABC you think has been pretty, they've taken a risk on, has been pretty successful?
Lost is the big example, just because it was so different starting out. And in the hands of the right people who have a clear enough vision, I think it has it now with the current production in Britain, but it would take a special team in order to make it work here. They have a little bit more protection, I think, in Britain. Of course, it depends on whether you're talking about if it had started from scratch now or remaking the classic series.
Right.
That's two different situations. Because I'm really amazed at how popular it's become, the mentions in mainstream media on it. I mean, it's still a cult show, but it's gotten a lot more notice in mainstream publications than it ever did when it was on the air the first time.
Yeah, I've noticed that a lot recently. I would say that if American television were to, say, get the rights to Doctor Who, instead of NBC got it, just as an example, and I'm going to use their version of Coupling, if everybody remembers Coupling. The All right, the American version, all they did was they took the scripts from the first season and then redid them with American actors, and it just fell flat on its face because, it, you know, you got British situations and American actors. It doesn't make sense here a lot of times. And the one episode I saw that was actually really, really funny was the only episode they showed that they wrote specifically for that cast. And with Doctor Who, they tried to start it over, and they changed too much stuff. And you couldn't have a police box in America. Nobody knows what it is. So you'd have to do something like a, I don't know, you'd probably have like a Coke vending machine or something.
Well, no, it's not that so much. Well, yeah, I guess if you're starting it directly from scratch, yeah, if it, you didn't have the history that it does. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, all the things they did wrong in the movie. But, I mean, you still could have used some of the same situations and still have a British cast but have it set in America or being filmed in America. Though it probably actually wouldn't be filmed in America. It would probably be filmed in Canada.
Right.
Yeah. Because costs are so much cheaper there, I guess.
Well, you look at how there's not only the cost but also the versatility. You look at how many seasons they ran of The X-Files and how many places Vancouver stood in for.
No.
I mean, there were some that weren't convincing. Like they didn't get anything set in Florida right until they moved to California. But they still were able to pull off enough locations using the same setting over and over again.
Well, they've done a real good job of making Cardiff look like a bunch of different places, too. So, what place?
Yes.
Cardiff.
Oh,
in
England.
Okay. In Wales, excuse me.
Oh, okay. I see you.
What would happen here is
Welsh capital.
If NBC got it, they put it on their new fall lineup, give it 2 weeks, and if it didn't have number one ratings, they're pulling it and putting something else on there. And I think, you know, they just don't give any shows enough time to survive in order to justify even spending money on them. And go ahead, whoever. Isn't technology grand? I would say, like, Doctor Who would do okay in syndication. I mean, look at Star Trek. I mean, if they'd have put it on like ABC, NBC, or CBS, they probably would have ran it two or three seasons and then given it a push. But because it was on syndication, it was able to build a bigger audience.
What I was saying about, you know, if it started on a cable network, you know, either Sci-Fi or some of the others, you look at some of the other shows, there's quite a few innovative small TV shows that are entertaining, and they're given the chance because they're not expected to get a big audience because it's cable.
Well, do you remember, I think a couple seasons ago when all the big major network decided to have like a sci-fi show type thing, like they show Threshold on CBS, Surface on NBC, and I think, I can't remember the other two, but, you know, they had like
Invasion
on ABC. I mean, those are, I thought, were pretty decent shows, but they didn't give them a chance in a horseshoe to develop it. And they said, well, let's yank it.
Well,
they put
them
on
back. In Evasion, ABC actually did air the entire season, and they didn't go anywhere after that. But they did make the commitment to show all the episodes, and I'm glad they did because it was an excellent show.
Yeah, I thought it was very good. I kind of dropped that about halfway when it started preempting it for other stuff, and then it would come back, and, you know, you never knew when it was on.
Yeah.
And they, another show on CBS, I hadn't really watched it, but I've heard good things about it, is that show Jericho. And they said that was, most of some people I talked to said that's a really good show, but it just, because the way the networks kept moving it around or didn't show a new episode or something, blah, 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 stuff like that. And then they said, well, let's not waste the time on and yank it.
Well, you know, if they don't get the numbers that Lost gets them right out the gate, then they're not going to leave it on. I was surprised that Lost did well because it's such a high-concept show, and it's one of those, really, you can get lost real quick, no pun intended, watching that show. But America seems to have taken to it. So that makes me think that you could put another high concept show like Doctor Who on ABC, and people would watch it if they had the chance. Threshold was another one that was really good that kind of didn't make it, and it didn't even last, what, half a season?
No, it did last, like, maybe because, you know, how every network's fighting for those ratings, of course, so, you know, go figure. Of course,
yeah,
they're
I
having...
think... Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry. Lady first. Go ahead.
I think Threshold only aired, like, 3 or 4 episodes before they yanked it, and they showed some more on Sci-Fi.
Right.
Yeah.
And it had decent ratings on Sci-Fi, from what I understand, too. So, you know, it doesn't have to just be on the Sci-Fi channel to get ratings. You just got to give more than 3 weeks. Look at Drive, which was an excellently written show.
Yeah.
And it stars Nathan Fillion, who I think is a pretty good actor. Had everything going for it. Even had a good time slot. But, you know, a lot of people switched off after, I forget what it was on before.
Don't
was it
time. Before? No, just, I'll tell you.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did we lose somebody?
I don't know. It sounded like somebody was starting to say something and then they stopped.
I just love live radio. Well, I don't know if you call this radio, but it's live. It's not Memorex. But just to say, like, you know, I've noticed a lot of the smaller networks, I think the main problem with the main networks is they're competing so hard with all these cable networks that have much, much better shows on them. And those guys, they don't have a lot to choose from, so they have to leave on kind of what's on. One that blows my mind that's getting season after season that shouldn't, but is a real good show, is The Dead Zone on USA. That would never have made it this far on ABC.
Well, that's part of it, too, being on a small... Well, and the cable networks, too, run a different season. That debate keeps coming up over and over again, you know, with repeats being a big issue. It's like it goes to repeats and people forget it's on and then they don't come back to it. But cable seems to run, you know, you could run a season of only 13 episodes and you're 9 months before you get to new ones, but people still come back.
You know, I think that's what we need to do here. Like, all right, look at Doctor Who. You've got basically 13 episodes, and they take the time to weed through the crap scripts to get at least some decent ones. So you have consistently good scripts throughout the entire season, whereas over here you've got 22 episodes that fill up. And so you get stuff like, you know, this week ER gets attacked by terrorists. You know, that stuff gets old after a while.
Yeah, and many of those are written on the fly.
And probably the same thing with, like, the CSI shows as well, too. But people still like watching those types of shows.
Well, you know,
not to say they're bad or anything, but, you know.
It's consistently good, though. They have the good actors, and they have pretty decent scripts, and they, you know, they're going by real life. Stuff like Law & Order, that's why I think Law & Order's still on, because it goes by what's going on in real life, but I don't know.
Well, not only that, too, is they're self-contained. For the most part, you could, and that's why they do so well. That's why CBS is doing so well, is because they have all these self-contained procedural shows, and they can sell them again and again and again, and they can repeat again and again and again.
Right.
Because you're not.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're not losing anything if you miss a couple weeks and you come back to it, you can pick it up and follow along. And that's where they've been having problems with some of the high concept stuff because it's had a season-long arc, and plus it's just you know, track records of the networks coming up with this thing, and they get you hooked in, and then they end up canceling it. So now it's even harder for people to get into a show. They're like, wow, I really like the show, but you know, if you miss it, you kind of fall behind, and then, well, it doesn't matter because they're going to cancel it anyway, so I might as well not watch it all.
Or you can just wait for the DVD to come out and watch it all at one time.
Yeah, well, that's why I said Doctor Who might work on ABC, because they've taken a new approach and kind of embraced the other methods of delivery. They may not make as much on the advertising dollars because they're not getting as many eyeballs in front of the television, but they reshow it the next day online, you know, for free. Plus, you know, so many are offering them through, you can buy them, download them through iTunes, or you can, you know, they're turning around and getting the DVDs out quickly. So they're still making the money off of it.
I think you're going to end up seeing that there's going to be a lot of this. Some of the smaller shows that don't make it, they'll end up making complete seasons of 12 episodes and just throw them direct to DVD. And that would be fine with me on some shows. Like, you could have done that with Firefly and kept it going for a while because, you know, they knew they shot themselves in the foot when they put Firefly out on DVD and it becomes the top-selling DVD of the year next to Family Guy.
Absolutely.
Which is another show that got canceled. So then they're like, well, we may have screwed up on that one.
Well, you look at some of the animated stuff, Family Guy, and now Futurama's coming back because they repurposed it for the Cartoon Network, and it was so popular, and the DVDs sold like crazy. They went, you know, maybe we were kind of wrong to lose this. But
you know,
I can't see that happening to a real, you know, a live show, live action.
Their big problem with that, though, was they're like, we didn't have any ratings when it was on. But if you look at when it was on, they moved it around the schedule so much, the person who watched the show wouldn't know when it was on again. Of course, now that the net's a little bit better than it was when, say, Family Guy was on originally, you can find it easier. You can look up when it's going to be on, you know. And their ratings problem are a lot of times their own fault for moving stuff around. You put a show on Friday night, you know it's going off the air because no one's at home watching it. Unless you're the X-Files, because apparently it did really well there for the first however many years it was on Friday night.
Well, you look at some of the other shows that are doing well. You know, CBS still has it locked up because they've got a good lineup there. The type of people who watch that type of show are home on that night.
Right.
You know, so it may skew a little older in viewers, but they're there and they're watching. And so you can adjust the advertising accordingly.
Right. All right, well, here's another quick discussion for you. Do you think American television should get smart enough to do what Britain does and just, all right, this goes in what we're saying. If they did 12-episode seasons, they could split it into four television seasons, essentially, and have one for each season of the year, and you could try a lot of the smaller shows, and if they don't work, they don't come back next year, but you get a complete run so you can finish the story out. But then you've got, you know, better quality, I think. You'd have a fall, summer, spring, and winter season.
I don't think that would actually work because the economic model doesn't support commercial TV for that. You got to think about the capital costs involved in starting a show from scratch. And you can do that if you're publicly funded and you have a pool of money that you're going to divide among several different resources. And if you also have legislation behind you like Britain does, that requires diversity in script writers and in production crew so that they're almost obligated to do little mini seasons because of the way that the laws are, not to mention the way that the funding is. It just really wouldn't work, and that's why you find that these mini seasons in America are chiefly done on HBO or other cable outlets. Who can afford that kind of paradigm. But as far as that being what happens on major network TV, no, I think we're stuck in the model that we have pretty much always had.
You know, yeah, that does make sense there because, you know, like even if you're like the USA Network or Sci-Fi Channel, you're still getting a little bit of a stipend from the cable subscribers who are getting the whole package.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so they're getting a little bit of money there, but there again, they've got executives that can control what you're doing more because they're giving you the money.
Right.
So it's like I think the future of television, stuff that you're afraid is going to go or new innovative things will be on the internet that people make themselves and put out, and they'll create whole new markets for stuff like that.
Well, exactly.
We live in hope.
Yeah, I mean, 20 years from now, you are going to see an economic model which develops, which supports much lower viewership because you know that you're going to be able to sell each individual episode. And you're already kind of seeing that with iTunes. But in the future, that's what it's going to be. You're going to pay for exactly what it is that you want.
Right.
And that's going to be a much more democratic way of distributing television. I can't wait for that. That's going to be great. But until then, you're kind of screwed.
Right. And, you know, I think the Nielsen ratings are kind of useless nowadays, and what they should be doing is officially keeping up with like TiVo and DVR numbers, because there are so many of these shows that are being recorded that way that no one's watching live. I mean, I know I have TiVo, and I haven't watched the commercial in God knows how long, but I'm still watching the show.
Yeah, I mean,
well,
it's like
they need to also come up with a model for torrent tracking as well, because that's really going to be a bigger part of their marketplace, whether they like it or not.
Right.
It's there.
Well, as a matter of fact, I was reading an article somewhere, and I forget, it was, oh, I know what it was. It was off of Kevin Smith's website for his View Askew, and someone there was interviewing Russell T. Davies. And he was telling somebody something like, you need to download tonight's episode because it's really good. And I just thought that was kind of funny, the producer of the show is telling somebody in America to download Doctor Who and watch it. I think what you're going to find, though, with our getting into, here's another discussion, illegal downloading or alternative means downloading. You'll find, I think, that most of the fans of shows like Doctor Who or, say, Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something they're trying to download, like, overseas. That's, Buffy's a bad example, but, you know, like Life on Mars or something like that, we'll still go out and buy it when we get it here in the States.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then, you know what? I'm downloading and watching it, and then I'm watching it when it comes on the Sci-Fi Channel so that the ratings are there. You know, I TiVo it. Maybe they're looking at those numbers. And when it comes out at the store, I'll go buy it because I want it.
and because there's value-added content on what you purchase, too.
Right.
And that's fine. But, you know, getting a little bit back to the earlier discussion about whether Doctor Who would work in the States, no. Clearly not. I mean, just no. Not unless you're going to fundamentally alter the nature of the show and you're going to Americanize it. Now, I don't think that there's anything wrong with Americanizing it. I'd love for there to be an American version of Doctor Who.
Right.
But then you're going to have a hue and cry from overseas that this is being done. Now, to take a recent successful example, The Office, I hate the American version, but I can completely appreciate that people like it
right
over here. And, you know, if both models have made money for the people that have made the product, I guess it's okay. But you, in order for Doctor Who to be successful as a 22-episode season, it has got to be fundamentally changed so that it's more along the lines of it's taking the Russell T. Davies model and saying continuity is actually a good thing. I'm going to embrace continuity. I'm going to go really far deep into continuity. And then what you do is you take the Heroes model, which is you have a very heavily continuity-based season that people are going to get lost if they join at episode number 10, but you allow all of that to be freely viewable on your network website.
Right.
And then it works, because the MSC has not lost a damn thing by putting it available on their website. In fact, they probably have gained viewers in the back half of the season because they've allowed people to catch up.
Right.
If you're going to do that with Doctor Who, and you're going to actually create seasons that are somewhat soap opera-ish, and Russell T. Davies is doing this, but he has a point past which he will not go. If you can create a narrative which is really interlaced with a lot of different emotional narratives that are interlocking, maybe you have a chance. But you're going to have to explain a whole lot more about the Doctor in order to satisfy American audiences. I mean, we see with the comparison now between Lost and Heroes, where Lost went wrong and Heroes is going right, is that Lost didn't give you anything. You have episode after episode of this season where you're not really advancing the plot that much, but Heroes actually gives you satisfying answers to questions that it poses six episodes in the past.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that an American audience, a mainstream American audience, is going to accept a mysterious Doctor without some greater implications. So you're going to have to go back and explain Gallifrey, and eventually you're going to suck the mystery out of it, because that's when the series ends. The optimistic hope in England is that, because they've seen it happen before, the thing will run forever. And the only way it runs forever is if you don't tell a damn thing about the Doctor. You start telling things, and it has to end.
Go ahead. And we're going to start a fist fight on the radio. Or on the
oh, my Lord.
No.
All right, well, you know, as the I guess, executive control of this podcast, I'll say something then.
There you go.
And you know what? I just forgot what I was going to say. So next person. That was real smooth.
That brain fart there. Yep.
Oh, I know what it was. All right, a good example of what you were just talking about there about heroes is when they made the big hullabaloo at the beginning of the year about Christopher Eccleston coming on there, and he's playing the invisible character Claude, and they're like saying stuff like, well, you know, if you go back and look at your earlier episodes, Claude may have been there, and he's not even known it. You know, then everybody, I'm sure, went and scrambled and started downloading and watching those episodes again, which brought in a bunch of other people. And that was just brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and they do that a lot by having a lot of nested little tidbits that you can go back and find. I'm not saying that Russell T. Davis doesn't do that on Doctor Who. He does, but
right.
it's not at the same level. You know, it's the difference between a Little League game and the World Series, really.
Yeah, right. I remember what I was going to say now. I was going to say that Russell T. Davies, to me, has been brilliant with keeping the mystery alive, even though all these fans already know all this history about the Doctor. I mean, they're throwing some stuff out there that's like, didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I mean, like, examples, he's like, they said he was, what, married or had kids or something, I think? And
well, I mean, we kind of assumed that he was traveling with his granddaughter at the beginning, and I don't know why so many people freaked out. That I've read many talkbacks for people like, how could he have had children? I'm like, well, he was flying around with his granddaughter.
Yeah.
Yeah, 45 years ago.
Right.
I mean, if you're 10 years old, you don't know that.
Right, but, you know, that's true. I mean, the new fans are probably shocked like you wouldn't believe, but I've heard old fans go, they're just going to ruin the show by having him have a family. And I'm like, well, he had one, apparently, and then I'm kind of interested to know why he left the planet to begin with. They've always just said, you know, it's just political reasons or he wanted to explore or there was something. You know, I want to know what caused him to leave and why the Time Lords were chasing him so badly. It couldn't be just because he took a TARDIS. You know, there's something else going on there.
Well, indeed.
I guess maybe they'll eventually explain why it's always been stuck as a phone booth all the time.
Oh, well, that's the chameleon circuit broke. Now, Jason's fairly new at this.
All right, I forgot about a lot of older stuff.
Yeah,
I watched a lot of older stuff. I'm getting back into it slowly.
I think they kind of mentioned that in series one.
Oh, it wasn't the first one. It wasn't like in the first.
Yeah,
season.
He's explaining it anyway.
Yeah.
All right, here's a question for everyone. Do you think that the resurgence of Doctor Who, being able to even be made again, is due in fact to shows success like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or Angel or even? I don't want to say Joss Whedon again, but Firefly, stuff like that's gotten such a. You could have a good genre show with great writing, and it'll suck people in that aren't even fans of sci-fi or fantasy. Do you think that is the possible reason why Doctor Who came back?
I think it has more to do with who brought it back than, you know, could it be brought back?
Right.
I think he had enough. I think Russell T. Davies had enough clout that. And he'd proven himself at making quality products that he could do it. And it's obvious he's a fan of the show. That's something that struck me so much, you know, especially watching the Confidentials where they talk about it. And it's like every single person who does anything on that show is a fan, you know, was a fan. They watched it growing up. And it shows. You know, because you listen to interviews with, you know, some of the people who worked on the classic series, and you know, you get the impression from a lot of them, well, it was a job. I showed up for work, and it's like, hey, we're making this, you know, funny science fiction show. And it's like, well, okay, just follow along. But this one actually has direction that it was wanted. You know, and then Russell was had enough clout and experience and you know, a track record that they gave him the chance and he knocked it out of the park.
Right.
And I think having that feeling in there is what helped sell it too. That, you know, it's not that, hey, I want to make a show and it's like, hey, we haven't done this in a while, let's try this. It's like, no, I want to do this show and here's how I want to do it and this is the things I want to have in it. And just having someone who has that vision and can express it is what got it, because those people get caught up in it. And you listen to him talk, and you can't help but get excited about it because he's excited about it. And I think that's what enabled it to come back.
I notice a lot of the writers are big fans of the show, especially like Mark Gatiss. You know, they done on his League of Gentlemen show, they did a lot of skits about Doctor Who, but like, Stephen Moffat. If you watch Coupling, there's Doctor Who references all through that. As a matter of fact, the last season of the show, one of the characters, Oliver, owns a comic book store and has a big Dalek sitting there and he talks to it. And he wears like a same Doctor Who shirt, you know. And I think it's great because, all right, you take Star Trek, which was totally ruined by people who weren't fans of the show. I think if you let some of the fans start writing for it, it would be good. At the last season of Enterprise, they had several people that grew up as fans writing for the last half of the season, and it really pulled it out. But, of course, they canceled it by then. And all plot continuities aside on that show, it turned out to be pretty good. But the last couple of Star Trek movies, I don't think worked because like the last one they did, Nemesis, Stuart Baird had never even watched an episode of the show, and he was directing the thing. So that doesn't help at all.
Oh, yeah. He did certain things he didn't even understand from the show.
Right. But you got writers, producers, directors who are on the show now on Doctor Who that really – they care about it enough to not let someone write something in there that's not going to work for the show, I think. I mean, you got the right person at the helm right now, and I'm sure he's going to go somewhere else one day and the show will keep going, but I'm wondering what kind of direction it'll take if somebody else comes in, or if one of the crew that he's working with now is just going to take over and keep going the same way.
He might actually visit another planet.
That would be incredible.
Nah.
Well, I mean,
or at least
a
gravel pit.
A lot of people talk about him not leaving Earth a whole lot, and someone may have said this, never heard anybody mention it either listening to Podshock or just discussions that, you know, Gallifrey's gone and the Doctor doesn't have a home, so he wants to hang around Earth. That's like his second home. And going off to other planets, I guess, are not something he wants to do right now because he's trying to heal a big wound in his heart, I guess you would say. Does anyone agree with that, or am I just blowing smoke here?
No, I've seen it too.
You know, that's like home for him. And, then, you know, Tom Baker said it a lot when he was a doctor that, you know, Earth was his favorite place to go. That's why they went there all the time. Because it cost less.
I guess standard of living was cheaper here.
Right.
Yeah, and at the quarry sites, they keep bumping into the Blake 7 film, so, you know.
Yeah. It's like, let's use the same sets and actors. I remember as a kid, the PBS station in Atlanta would show Blake 7 right before it would show Doctor Who. So I'm, like, watching Blake 7 one night, and, you know, I'm enjoying it for the first time. I've never seen it before, and I really got to where I like the character of Vila a whole lot. And then the next episode, I think, I don't remember the name of the episode. It's the one that the actor that played Vila was on. I'm like, wait a minute.
Oh, the Sunmakers.
Yeah, that's what it was, the Sunmakers. And I was like, wow, they really share their actors. Of course, then Colin Baker was on an episode of Blake 7, too, you know, way before he was the Doctor. So a lot of people were cross-pollinating.
I know anytime there's any kind of movie that has any percentage of British cast or, you know, or TV show or something like that, it's like, play the drinking game. Spot the Doctor Who actor.
Watch that one Magnum P.I. season premiere. You're going to get hammered.
You're going to get hammered?
Well, it had, like, several people that were in Doctor Who at the time in it, and Peter Davison was one of them.
Yeah.
Oh, he guest starred in
Magnum goes to England, and I think the guy that's like showing him around is Peter Davison, and then Julian Glover is in it as kind of the villain, isn't he? He's always the villain. And I think there was a lady that was in it, too, that was in an episode. She's the woman that plays, she's in The Robot to Death, I think, was in it. I could be wrong. I probably am.
I guess the people on Magnum P.I. must have loved Doctor Who to bring all those guest stars on there.
No, it's just some good actors. You know, if I'm going to do a show, I'm going to pick people that are pretty good in front of a camera. And when you go to England, that seems to be the ones that were on TV at the time. So
mm-hmm.
You go with. But I have noticed there's a few former stars that have chimed in on it. And, there's one star that people just lambast all the time about how horrible he is. And I never really saw that was Colin Baker. Nobody likes him that I know, really. And I enjoyed him as the Doctor, kind of. I especially enjoy him now on the audio stories. Anybody have any opinions about Colin there?
I had the lucky happen chance to actually meet him as he was taking over the role. So, I mean, his character was a bit abrasive at first, but it kind of tempered it because I had met the guy, and he's really a sweet person. So, and as I don't understand why so many people are, like, vehement about their hatred of his portrayal of the Doctor.
I don't think it's his portrayal I don't like. I think it's the fact they just had really bad scripts.
Yeah.
He kind of
got the short end of the stick there, and
right.
A lot of blame was laid on in his hands, and it wasn't his fault.
Well, my absolute favorite Doctor Who episode is the two Doctors.
Yeah.
He worked with Troughton. I mean, and at that time when I was a kid, I hadn't seen a lot of Troughton because they weren't showing it because there's nothing there hardly. And the more I've seen of Troughton, I think he's one of my favorites. And you know, he's the reason why we still have a show today. And Colin Baker seems to be a very good champion for the show, and from all the interviews I've heard, he really is a huge fan of it. And it's just kind of neat to think back to that, you know, Peter Davison may be watching this week's Doctor Who and being as excited about watching it as we are.
His kids are huge Doctor Who fans. In fact, there's a interview that he did on, I think, I can't remember.
DWO,
I think. Yeah, it was DWO. Well, no, it's the, it's a bonus disc for Doctor Who magazine, in which he reveals that his son is such a big fan that Peter Davison had to pull strings with Russell T. Davies to get permission for his son to come on the sets and things. It's huge, and in fact, doesn't, you know, prefers David Tennant over Peter Davison as the Doctor.
That's kind of funny. Dad, you're cool and all, but this guy's better than you are.
Oh, you mean Tennant? You mean like David Tennant or something?
Yeah.
Well, his Peter Davison's daughter is an actress, and she was up for one of the parts on Doctor Who, I thought.
She was actually up for Rose at one point.
Yep.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting. Peter Davison's daughter is the new companion. But, you know, I tell you what, I think they hit the ball out of the park with Billy Piper. I mean, I remember reading people like this pop prince. It's like if Britney Spears was going to be taking over as the companion, and then she turns out to be a really good actress. So we know this.
She got better as it went along, but I really didn't like her at first. I really prefer Martha.
Oh, yeah.
I like Martha a lot better than Rose.
Yeah, so do I.
I think she's really, you know, to quote Colin Baker, a revelation. And I'm not knocking Billy Piper because, you know, I miss Rose too, but this dynamic between her and the Doctor, I think it's more of a traditional companion role. And it's not like the hokey love fest that kind of started getting toward at the end. Not that I minded that, it's just, you know, I never would have considered, you know, say Tom Baker running around mooning it. Well, actually I would if you watch City of Death. It looks like he's having a date with Romana in Paris, but.
Well, that's
a little love fest.
Yeah. That's something I've liked in the new series is that they've actually addressed that, you know, because before it was like, oh, no, there's nothing going on. There's no hanky-panky. And here it's like, you never think there actually might be. And, you know, but they're not making a big deal out of it.
Right,
you
well,
know,
the
Doctor kind of
has a crush, you know. And
yeah.
I guess
and, you know, that makes sense because they're human females and that's what girls do.
That's what mostly goes around with him. I didn't even want to get into Adric and Turlough. I really don't. But, you know, going back to what she was saying earlier about, you know, you met Colin Baker right before he took the part. Well, kind of an interesting side story to that is, any of y'all remember when the BBC about 86 or 87 was traveling around the country with like this, it was like a semi that had Doctor Who stuff in it?
Yep.
And they came to Emory University. And they had, Pertwee was there, and John Nathan Turner, and Sylvester McCoy. Now, Sylvester McCoy had gotten the job 2 days before he was flown to Atlanta to meet all these fans who never even heard that Colin Baker was going out. And it was the night they were premiering the new Colin Baker that they hadn't been showing on PBS yet. So you've got all this new Colin Baker stuff, and then, you know, he was the current Doctor, and then suddenly you've got this guy no one's ever heard of. But we sat down and had a Q&A, and people were getting kind of hostile with him. And he had his hat. That was actually his hat, because they're like, is there anything that, you know, you want to see in your costume? And he rolled his hat down his arm and flipped it up on his head, and we were, like, cheering for some reason. And I just thought that was neat. I met Sylvester and got his autograph before he was even the Doctor. And then I've been kind of a devoted Sylvester McCoy fan ever since. You know, each one's got their own personality, but my favorite Doctor is Sylvester, and I think it's just because I met him. But he has one of those personalities, and he's one of those extremely nice people. And I read an article with him. I don't know how many of y'all read it, but he was talking about how he saw some girl was afraid of something, and he told her he was the Doctor and made her feel better. And she knew he was because she'd seen him on TV. But he likes the show too, apparently. It's good that all these older actors are like, yeah, it's good. I don't feel bad now, because it could have come on and been terrible.
Yeah.
And what's even worse is it could have come on and been terrible, and we're in season 3. There's a lot of shows that do that, and I don't know why, other than somebody's executive's son or wife really likes the show, and they'll keep it on for them, you know.
Or that it makes money.
Yeah, you know, that too. A lot of things out there that make money that make no sense.
Like, welcome to the Beverly Hillbillies.
Yeah. Oh, God. You know, I do not understand how the OC or One Tree Hill stays on so long, but, you know, stuff like Firefly is gone in 14 episodes.
Well, Firefly is a crime, but, you know, One Tree Hill, at least there's a narrative that you can follow and get interested in. I mean, it hits a particular segment. You may not be in that segment of the market, but
right.
It satisfies that.
Right. I didn't mention Gilmore Girls because I've never seen it, but a lot of people tell me it's one of the best written shows on television.
It is.
I've seen the show. I kind of enjoy the show a lot, but even though I missed this season, which is pretty much they just finally ended it. But from what I have seen of it, it has been a pretty good written show from what I've seen of the show so far.
I've got too much other stuff that I watch to add something like that right now, because it's hard enough to keep up with what's on now.
Yeah, that was one reason why I never got into it. That's why I'm in mourning over Veronica Mars right now, that there doesn't look like it's coming back.
Well,
yeah,
like it might, come,
gone,
it
I
might come back retooled as the Veronica Mars at the FBI Academy show, but I don't see that happening either.
I think they said most of the writers have already left, and they're all looking for. They're all getting other jobs now elsewhere from whatever.
Yeah.
They'll probably pull a Galactica 1980 and like, oh, let's bring it back, and none of the stars want to come back, so they'll have to like hire all new people and set it 20 years in the future on Earth.
I hate to give a bad example, but look, remember the show Airwolf?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that show.
And then in the first 3 seasons were, you know, you had the original crew, and then it goes to like USA Network. And the Yankees said, let's put a bunch of brand new characters on there.
Yeah.
That just went tank down the hill. I guess, like, the same example as the Galactica 1980 thing, too.
Well, you know, Stargate's kind of getting that way. You know, they've got revolving characters that come in from time to time. I quit watching that a while back anyway, but, you know, it's when you start tooling with a show like that, it's just going to go downhill. It's like the Dukes of Hazzard when they replaced, you know, Bo and Luke with Vance and Coy. The show was really bad.
Yeah, and then somehow they agreed to bring him back somehow to end it, like, what, 1 or 2 more seasons?
Right. Well, I mean, it wasn't like the Dukes of Hazzard was a paragon of Emmy Awards either, but, you know, but they could feel like that.
Something like Aliens later on or something, some crazy off-the-wall stuff on that show? Because I thought I had, like, Aliens or something on there.
I don't know.
Later.
I was 8 when it was on, so
oh.
I don't remember. I haven't watched it since. You know, one thing I've noticed about stuff coming out on DVD, I'm catching things that I watched as a kid, and I'm like, why the heck did I even watch that show?
Especially like cartoons, too.
I've seen cartoons that I used to watch when I was a kid, and it's like, oh, my God, when I was 5, this was the bomb. And I watched it now, and it's like, oh, my God, this is total crap.
Well, when Battlestar Galactica, the original series, came out on DVD, I got it. I watched it. I loved it. And then I'm like, oh, Buck Rogers is out. Heck yeah. And I got in. I'm like, man, this is the worst show on television. Then I watched reruns of Knight Rider. And then I was like, how did America even let this stay on for 5 years? Shows like that survive, but good stuff nowadays just gets yanked.
Well, I guess. Yeah. Well, what about like Quantum Leap or something? Is that, would you consider a so-so, or?
I still like Quantum Leap. I can watch that anytime. And
yeah.
Because the
acting was really good, and with the time travel format, you know, you weren't locked into a time period, so it's still relevant today.
I read an interesting rumor about Quantum Leap recently that Bakula is available now. Sci-Fi Channel owns the rights. They're talking to them about doing a 2-hour backdoor pilot kind of show, like they did with Battlestar Galactica, the remake, and possibly bringing Quantum Leap back in a still kind of limited basis.
Yeah, but see, you could get away with that on cable, too. They could bring something back, you know, for 6-12 episodes, and that'd be it, and it's fine. But it's so hard to get away with that on the networks, because they're so fixed on the bottom line. If it doesn't take off immediately, yank it, put something else there.
Well, I mean, you've got, like, shows like Tremors that weren't great, or they weren't horrible, but they at least got a chance.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's the cable networks can settle for a lower. They're not expecting to get a big audience. So, I mean, if they only get 1 or 2 million people, it's like, hey, that's great for them.
Right.
You don't really get the quality so much, you know, with, you could do something big special effects because they just wouldn't have the money for it. But there's a ways around it. If you have clever writing, you could come up with something clever and not be as worried about, you know, if you've got all the latest and greatest effects.
I guess it's kind of like how Stargate SG-1 has been lasting so long. I mean, because being on a cable all that time and stuff, and it's such a silly, fun show, I guess, and since it doesn't take itself so serious. I mean, for any show to go about 10 seasons, I'm like, geez, that's amazing just to be that long, period.
Especially for a genre series.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
I guess, like, you know, like in Farscape, for example, I mean, when Sci-Fi yanked that show off, I was like, you know, everyone was pissed, but they somehow, Sci-Fi, I guess, later on caved in and said, all right, we'll give a 2-hour finale movie to end the show, so give it some closure at least.
Farscape was a different kind of animal, too, because it wasn't just made for the Sci-Fi channel. It was actually three different countries
who were
doing it, so they had to do a balancing act. It's like what went over well in this country didn't care for, and what that country loved, the other two didn't. And, you know, so I think there's a lot more factors in there than the Sci-Fi channel canceling it.
Well, like another thing about that was, like, say in England when they do a series, they'll produce just that series, and that's all they're really concerned about. And if it does well, then they'll produce the second series. But, you know, like Coupling.
Yeah, they'll do it again.
There was a year or two in between seasons of Coupling. Blackadder, I know, had like 3 or 4 years in between a season. And then they'd do a season of 6 episodes, and then they'd move on to something else. And that way, I guess it's kind of the creative juices can keep flowing, and you don't beat it to death while it's on television.
Yeah,
even Fawlty Towers had a block difference there.
You know, a show in America that, you know, it's a guilty pleasure for me because my better half, she likes it a lot, is Desperate Housewives. You know, like the first season was really somewhat well-written and paced, and the second season was okay, but this last season is just awful. We haven't even watched it in 6 weeks. And the thing I noticed is you can turn it on any episode and instantly know what's going on. The dumbing down of America. But it's like one of the top 5 shows in the world.
I don't know, this movie they came out with that Mike Judge did recently that didn't get much support. It's kind of a funny movie. If you've ever seen y'all ever get to check out Idiocracy.
Yeah, I heard Idiocracy is pretty funny.
Yeah. It's kind of stupid, but you have to kind of, you know, put your brain down a little bit to realize, oh, so that's what they mean by that, blah, blah, blah. So,
I have a question for you guys. All right. I would raise your hands, but no one will see it. Most of us here, I guess, would take it as verboten that we listen to podcasts, right? I guess. We're all here, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all listen to MMM commentaries? The guys from Australia that do, like, fan-done commentaries? They have, like, a podcast. If anybody wants to hear something truly entertaining, listen to those guys. They're funny. But they're real good at analyzing stuff, and they know their stuff when it comes to it as well. So,
I haven't gotten into commentary so much because you kind of have to be watching what they're watching to get the full effect. I've been mainly doing podcasts that I can listen to, like when I'm in the car or at work.
Well, what they do is they'll put commentaries out, but then they also have a podcast where they have different segments and they talk about like what's coming up on DVD and they give their impressions of it. And then they have like a segment where they talk about they call it Dear Desperate, where one of the fans of the show writes in and asks a question and they try to answer it, you know, about like one I heard recently was can you name some of the like big budget movies that flopped that were sci-fi and fantasy? And so they go through and they talk about all those and they have some really good impressions of things. And then they have another segment about, they call it the Oove, where they did one on H.G. Wells and went through all of H.G. Wells' works, and then they did another one on different versions of the Time Machine that's been out, and it's pretty interesting. But they're huge Doctor Who fans. There's never an episode that goes by where they don't reference it some way or another. And over the last, like, 8 weeks, they've been doing this thing about the producers of Doctor Who, and this goes through an in-depth history of each producer from day one to John Nathan Turner, and they have backstory and all kinds of things that I've never even heard of before. And it's just a real interesting thing to check out. As a matter of fact, they got Katie Manning, who played Jo Grant, on there singing their theme song because, you know, she's from Australia, and they met her at a convention and had a big interview with her. So, I mean, there's a lot of Doctor Who news that comes out of, you know, Australia that's interesting. So if anybody wants to know, it's a very bad plug for a podcast I enjoy. Not that I don't enjoy the other ones because, you know, Doctor Who Podshock is like my favorite podcast of all time.
No, I'd have to concur with that. I can't even say it. MMM Commentaries is really, really good.
They are.
yeah.
They're entertaining. A lot of us get long-winded and just babble, but these guys, you can tell there's some pre-production that goes on that show.
Well, they have the advantage, too, of everybody's in the same room, which helps
true.
A whole lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I recently found them, and I thought they're interesting, but they do have a lot of good Doctor Who discussion, and they have a lot of commentaries they've done for episodes you can't get.
Right.
Yeah,
they're in the middle of Seeds of Doom, I think, right now.
Yeah, they got about three of those out, but they're pretty entertaining, and there's stuff that I don't know where they get their information, but it's pretty in-depth. But some of the movies, like, you know, they've got one for Star Wars. You don't have to be watching Star Wars, surely, by now to listen to a podcast. I know exactly where they are. And, you know, the stuff they do is for stuff like that. Now, they got, like, Stargate episodes they've done one. They even did one for the pilot episode of The West Wing, which is pretty interesting to hear the impressions of an Australian about American politics.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting.
I don't even want to hear Americans talking about American politics.
Yeah, we're not getting into that discussion. I'm putting my foot down. Boom.
I'm sure we'll have a fist fight or something coming up. We did that.
I'm sure there's some kind of live talk cast on now about how Democrats suck or Republicans suck. I'm not going to get in the middle of that one.
Yeah. Hey, has anybody seen a video podcast called Galacticast?
No.
I've heard of it.
You've got to check them out. They are hilarious. It's amazing that they do a lot of green screen stuff, and it's all done, you know, in their apartment. But it's the writing is really clever, and they've done quite a few really good parodies of Doctor Who.
I love parodies.
Yes.
I like the one they did with Eccleston, why he only lasted in Doctor Who for one season.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Dead Ringer.
Yeah. There's some really great ones out there. I still like the ones from the League of Gentlemen that Mark Gatiss was in. I mean, that's a guy, that's like a fan's dream right there. He grows up watching Doctor Who. He makes fun of it. He ends up being on an episode, actually gets a critically acclaimed performance, and then he's written some of the best episodes of the show. Yay, Mark. Of course, you know, then you got Russell T. Davies, who I read somewhere has his own full-size Dalek in his living room. So there you go.
Oh, my God.
Fan geek right there. He's one of us.
I guess that's what drives most good shows, having real good geek and is knowledgeable about that show.
Well, I've been hearing things, you know, just reading things from time to time about, you know, fans of the show that are famous now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I know Joss Whedon, we mentioned him earlier, he's a fan of it, and you can actually see some of it in his writing.
Mm-hmm.
People like, I think they said Adam Sandler was a big Who fan when he was growing up. I mean, everybody remembers fondly where they were. Now, I wouldn't say that I ever hid behind the couch when I was watching it, but I was also like 12 or 13 when I first noticed it.
No, I was like 16, so.
I was flipping through the channels one night on Georgia Public Television, and they were showing The Five Doctors. And that's, they premiered Doctor Who with The Five Doctors, which is kind of smart if you think about it. Kind of gives a little backstory there through the episode, and then they started with Tom Baker, and then jumped around from doctor to doctor as they became available, and then it disappeared. But now it's back, but they're showing Eccleston on PBS. Mr. I'm the Doctor for one season, and don't even mention it to me again.
I wonder if he'll ever agree to do one little one more episode, sort of like could do a between the eighth and ninth Doctor.
If they were smart, they had it in his contract when he signed it that if they ever did a multi-Doctor story, they'd have to do it. I hope they don't do that, though. I think that's the epitome of cheesiness. Not that
I wouldn't mind seeing the regeneration story.
That's what I want to see.
Well, see, I've been reading on forums all week that somebody has announced that the BBC is letting them do like a one-off movie that's about the Time War. And it's McGann, and I don't know if they'll show him going into Eccleston, but at least there's going to be... Because his audiobook, you know, they did that whole season on BBC Radio where, you know, he had a whole story arc and more people were listening to it and it had good production value. And people are asking for more McGann stories because he kind of got shorted, I think. You know, it's hard to say you're a big Paul McGann fan from the show because he had the one movie. He's only in half the movie, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they ever going to make that radio play available somewhere?
They have already. It's available. Yeah. It's coming out in monthly installments from Big Finish. They're about finished. I think that they may even be on Human Resources by now.
Yeah, that's the one I was interested in, was Human Resources, because I was listening to the reviews of it, and it's like, damn, I missed it.
Oh, no, you must get Human Resources. But the thing about it is, Human Resources isn't going to make a great deal of sense to you if you haven't listened to the whole season, because that's a very interconnected season.
Right.
And it will have much more meaning for you if you've listened to all eight of the stories.
Now, the one thing that's confused me about that, and if anybody's in it has been really following the McGann Doctor radio show or Big Finish shows, is have they explained what happened to his last companion, or did they just start over and don't know what's going on?
No, it's a total reboot.
Okay.
And in fact, you could quite easily leave out everything that's come before and say that the only thing that is in your personal canon is the movie, and then they go straight into the adventures with Lucy, and you really wouldn't miss anything as far as continuity is concerned.
Yeah, I got kind of tired of Charlie there toward the end.
Yeah, they didn't necessarily use her as well as they could have, but she was okay in certain stories. Some stories she's really good in, but others not so much.
I tell you what, there's been a couple of Colin Baker ones where I, honest to God, was about to bust the gut laughing so hard while I was listening to it. Like, has anyone heard the Doctor Who and the Pirates one where they're singing, like, Gilbert Sullivan tunes?
Yeah.
It's just funny. You can tell he has a lot of fun with it. But then again,
oh,
if I was at the end of my career and people were offering me this stuff, I'd be taking it too. But, you know, to him, it's more than just a paycheck, I think.
Yeah. That's come out in several interviews.
Right, the back on the Colin Baker soapbox, I guess. No, I'm not a paid representative of Colin Baker.
I mean, I think that it's a legitimate thing to say that there are two Colin Bakers. And
yes.
You can not be a fan of one of them, but you can be a fan of the other one, I suppose. Because I certainly do not like him on TV.
He's so good on audio, isn't he?
He really is. He's very good on audio. But I don't think that the problems in the Colin Baker era are down simply to production values or the BBC or anything. I think that some of the blame of that actually does rest with him.
Right.
He's not a very physically expressive doctor or actor, I don't think. I mean, he's very cheesy in the way that he uses his face, and it drives me insane to actually watch him.
Right. I think that he is the William Shatner of the Doctor Who world. he is the Kirk of the Doctor Who world, definitely.
See, I don't know that that's an insult.
Maybe that will be a compliment or something for him.
I don't know. It could be.
Early Shatner is actually
started on this reboot of the Star Trek reboot. That's going to be interesting. Whether they'll actually hire Matt Damon or not to play Captain Kirk.
Oh. God. The pain.
Yeah, let's while we're at it, hire Pauly Shore to be in Hamlet.
Let's not hire Pauly Shore to be
Adam
in anything.
And what, Adam Sandler is Spock?
No, they were actually talking Affleck. It's like Affleck and Damon as Kirk and Spock, but I think Affleck's not interested, but Damon certainly is. But, you know, J.J. Abrams is directing it. He's a pretty good writer, producer, and like I think Damon Lindelof, who's the front runner of Lost, is producing. So I don't think it'll suck. I just think, you know, they could do something better than going to Starfleet Academy when Kirk was in school. Why don't we just create a whole new universe of, you know, boot it into the future a little bit. Let's create another canon of characters and do new things instead of just rehashing the old stuff with new actors.
Well, that's the thing I didn't like about Enterprise, is that it was supposed to be before the classic series, but it didn't fit. It was like it was too advanced. So I'm not a big fan of them going backwards. It's like, go forwards, because there's more things we can do, and you could better believe that it's even further in the future.
It would just
flow better.
Well, they screwed the continuity of that show up in the very first episode by the fact that they met the Klingon, which they said in the original series they didn't meet until, like, hundreds of years later. So
yeah,
they had to spend some time trying to fix that plot hole.
Well, that's the thing, too. It's just too easy to screw things up. It's like, hey, there's this really cool thing, and let's do it. It's like, yeah, but if you do that, it just totally blows away all the continuity of the other show. And it's like, so what? It's cool.
But
let's do it.
In the future where nothing else has happened.
Hey, yeah, well, that's the saying. It's like you got a blank slate. Do whatever you want.
Does anyone remember a fan-written book that came out, and it was big on the convention circuit, and I bought it when I was there. It was called The Doctor and the Enterprise, and it was about the Tom Baker Doctor. He lands on the Enterprise. There's a whole book about it. I mean, it was a pretty good story,
too. Oh, my God,
too.
I think I remember that. That was Gene Erie, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Gene Erie, yeah. It's actually freely available. She's licensed it to internet distribution, so you can get it, the text of it at least, on the internet with no consequence.
Right. That's an awesome story. If anyone listening out there, if you've never read it, find The Doctor and the Enterprise. It's actually well written, and it fits as both a Star Trek episode and a Doctor Who episode, I thought. But, you know, I was 14 when I read it, so it's been a while. I'm going to go back and read it. Mark my words, folks. It'll probably, people think it's terrible just because I said I like it.
Maybe a bitch in the butt later or something.
Probably. We are going to be on the air for posterity. Well, all right. I think we've probably embarrassed ourselves long enough today. I appreciate everyone being here. And you know, something I just noticed about TalkShoe is it's saying that it's 7 o'clock at night on my screen. Is anyone getting that?
Yeah, because it's Greenwich Mean Time.
Ah, okay. Well.
Yeah, it actually says it's almost 8:30. I know. I keep looking at that, going, "What? How long have I been here?" But no, that's Greenwich time.
Right. I want to thank everyone for being here, and I promise you, I'll be a lot more organized next week. It's been a crazy week, and I'm trying to update my sound system a little bit here. And you know how it is when you're fiddling around with things, especially with TalkShoe. It doesn't like to play well, but eventually someone will write some kind of script that will fix everything. Hint, hint, someone out there, please tear the system apart and put it back together again so it works better.
Is anybody else using Vista?
I am using Vista right now, and to tell you the truth, I believe I'm going to be taking Vista back off my computer and putting XP on. Ugh.
Yeah,
I'm
losing my affection for it. It's getting to be annoying that that cancel or allow is really starting to bug me. It's like, I installed the damn program. Yes, I want it to run. Just run the damn thing and don't bother me.
Well, I do computers. I'm an IT person at a company that does actual putting in the internet cabling, you know, like Cat5 and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're members of the Microsoft Action Pack, so we got Vista Business, you know, with that. So we loaded it on our personal computers. And you know what I found out about Vista is that you've got this computer that you have to have at least a gig and a decent video card, a gig of memory and a decent video card and a pretty decent hard drive to run it. If you take like a 4 gig or higher USB thumb drive and plug it in your computer and set it up to work as your page file,
mm-hmm.
your computer will get about 50% more speed.
Because
the page file system is when you go to try to find a file and it's paging it, the paging is coming back at the same time and it's kind of bouncing off itself, so it takes longer to get to you.
Yeah.
Does Vista use NTFS anymore? Does it use a different type of file system?
To tell you the truth, I don't know. I didn't even look at that part yet. I think it is, but I know that if you're using Office, there's now, like in the, say you're using Windows, say you're using Word, and you name it test.doc. Well, now it says .docx, and supposedly you can't open any of the new Office 2007 stuff in anything under Office 2007. Haven't tried it, but that could be bad.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
I've got the trial, but I haven't really played with it. Because I just got Home Basic because it came with my new computer.
Now, what I understand is Home Basic is pretty much Windows XP with a GUI on it that looks like Vista. It's the
it's a little bit. I've been getting most things to run on it. It really, really hates my iPod though.
Oh yeah.
iTunes will crash a lot, and then it'll reboot and it'll try to boot to the iPod. And I get an error message saying it's like no operating system found. It's like, well, no shit.
Well, I have a Mac next time.
I have a Mac too, which I normally record on, but it's in the place we moved into down here in Florida is not real conducive to having more than one computer, and my mixing board's too big for the bedroom where my Mac is because I have a nice big screen for the Mac, so I watch movies on it. And I'm going to fix that problem for next week. Because Vista's not real good for recording either, I don't think. I do a lot of video editing and DVD producing and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
and it's not very good for that either. I mean, I have a gig of memory in my computer, and I feel like I need to put two more in it just to get it to run at a decent speed.
I would have actually did better with video editing anyway.
Right. Well, I use the Mac for that. If I want to build a DVD from scratch, I like using my PC, but most of the time I use just iMovie and iDVD because it's easy. But with Vista, I don't know, it's just something not right there. I know the Internet Explorer you don't need to use at all because since I've been using Internet Explorer with my Vista, I've gotten so much spyware it's not even funny.
Because I've been having problems with Firefox running in Vista.
Really?
Yeah, it's not great.
Well, I just downloaded Firefox yesterday and it's working beautifully. I think they may have a new build of it.
Yeah, I'll have to see if there's an upgrade because I was having. Well, there's some websites that won't come up at all in Firefox.
Why don't you try just for the heck of just give it a shot? Try Opera, see how it works.
Yeah, like
give Opera a shot just for the heck of it.
Opera?
Yeah, just for the heck of it. I mean, I still like Firefox, of course, but sometimes you can always mess around and see how Opera work on it too. Just a suggestion.
I just noticed I had a problem when Internet Explorer started saying I can't open that because Java's not enabled and you don't have the right security settings. And I'm like, I'm the administrator. I should have the right security settings. So there's an issue there. So
you're not authorized.
Right. After I get off today, I'm probably going to just reinstall my computer and take Vista off of it because I'm beginning, you know, it's pretty sad that I'm missing Windows XP right now.
Well, I skipped it. I went right from 2000 to Vista, so.
But I will say that, all right, if everyone wants to, we'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel, and we'll have a topic. But, like, I guess I'll start a thread in the forums that says, hey, anyone have an idea for a topic for us to discuss, please bring it up. And I don't want it just to be about the current episode or the new series in particular, you know, if somebody has a question about something that was going on in the classic series, please ask, because somebody here is going to know the answer.
Well, we did pretty good today. You know, it was a little slow getting started, but we were able to keep a good conversation going on several topics.
I think so. And then I'm going to edit it a little. I'm not edit out anything we say, but I'm going to make it sound a little better. I have noticed that when you're recording talks, it sounds real muffled, but when you actually go back and listen to it, it's a lot clearer. So
yeah,
I think
if
people download this stuff, it'll sound a lot better. But I'm going to upload it into GarageBand and clean it up a little bit, I think. And I'll put it out on the feed that way, too, so you can download it on iTunes and all that. And just the same.
Just going out on your normal feed, West?
I'm going to create a new feed for CIA, I think. And
okay.
I may run in tandem for a few weeks a couple of the episodes on both feeds, just so that some people that are listening to Geek Week, because I don't know what it is, but when I got mentioned on PodShock, suddenly I had like, I'm downloading almost, I've got almost 2,000 people a week pulling stuff off of me now. And it went from 500. So yeah, that is pretty good. So I appreciate any effort anyone has had on my behalf, and would like to invite some of y'all onto my show one day when I get that set up. Go back to my old just calling in on Skype and talking thing. It's a lot easier. But thank you guys for being here today, and we're going to do this again next week, and I will be a lot better prepared, and I hope everyone else will. So thank y'all very much, and y'all have a good day.
You too.
All right. Thank you much.
No problem.